Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer, Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, covering the controversial decision to explore proposals related to the development of a soccer stadium at the Memorial Center.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
Council has decided to move forward with Victory Grounds Ventures in exploring a potential soccer stadium at the Memorial Center. Between many delegations and the councillors' discussion, a large portion of the five-hour council meeting this week was dedicated to discussing the proposal. This decision comes after a tumultuous week of community conversation surrounding the stadium. A petition to halt the project had just over 5,000 signatures prior to the meeting, and now sits at over 5,600 signatures. Delegations echoed concerns that have been discussed in the past week, especially surrounding the impact on the Memorial Center Farmers Market and the annual fall fair, which currently use the open green space and barns on the proposed site. Member of the Farmers Market Board, Andrew McCann, spoke before council to drive home their concerns.
The developer promises everyone everything. You can still have your market fair, bike shop, cricket, baseball, dog park, and track. But the simple truth is that option one in any form would see a for-profit venture eat almost half this unique public green space in the heart of our city.
Co-chair of the Williamsville Community Association, Annette Barford, also dove into the impact on the Williamsville community, which also happens to be the densest district in the city and has the least amount of park space per capita.
A stadium does not belong in this residential neighborhood, especially one so dense where open green space is so precious. The impacts on surrounding neighbors will be immense when league games occur. Massive noise and light impacts, traffic congestion, and parking chaos for blocks.
While these concerns have been the center of the conversation for the past week, councillors noted that they've received an equal amount of emails in support of the project. Jesse Topley, a community member and longtime youth sports coach, shared his perspective before council.
2 years ago, when Rigi was under construction, we practiced on a city field. About a month into our season, all city fields were being reseeded, therefore prohibited our use. We then used the field at Memorial Center. Before using it, I had our entire team scan the field for any ditches, divots, or anything that could stick, jab, poke, cut, or infect my players, such as used needles. Let's just say, based on these conditions, I canceled practice that day. To touch briefly on the lack of accessibility in the area, we had nowhere to go except a patch of grass near a city field that was about 30 by 60 feet, an entire football team for an entire season. How are these young athletes meant to have a sense of pride in their community when this is their reality? Building this stadium will show young athletes local to this area that they are worth investing in. And from personal experience from those that I coach in, there is a feeling that they are an afterthought compared to those that live in the West End and in the East End.
Tourism Kingston and the Kingston Chamber of Commerce, two organizations that have been discussing the opportunity with Victory Grounds Ventures throughout the past few months, spoke in support of the stadium at the meeting, stressing the potential economic benefit, including bringing over 200 jobs to the city. Victory Grounds Ventures manager Paul Barbeau also spoke to the positive impact this could have on the community.
This project serves as a platform for athletes to rise, fans to unite, and the community to thrive. Bringing a multi-sport dome and a professional sports team to the city is more than just a project. It's a vision for the future, laying the foundation for a vibrant, thriving community that celebrates resilience, teamwork, and the power of sport to change lives. These are not only physical structures or entertainment. They are the heartbeat of a community that fosters connections, pride, and excitement. We're excited about the opportunity to work together with the city and the community groups to make this project a reality, benefiting from the community and creating a vibrant space in sports and recreation in the heart of Kingston.
Marnie Dicker, Executive Vice President of Infrastructure and Chief Legal Officer with the Canadian Premier League, also made an appearance to assure that the promise of a professional team is not out of reach.
If you build it and all of the conditions are met, we will come. We are very interested in Kingston. Mr. Bribeau brought forward to me many details, analytics, statistics as to why he and his ownership group felt that this would be a feasible location. We have been sufficiently convinced that the fans will be there and the venture will be successful.
Councillor Lisa Osanek reflected on past proposals for the Memorial Centre and ultimately decided this may overcrowd the already bustling space.
Like, my problem with the Memorial Centre, and maybe this goes back to, you know, being on council during the term where Memorial Centre was going to turn into condos for all the money to then go toward the sale of the land to go towards paying the slush puppy place. And then again, with, you know, putting the high school at Memorial Centre, like, here we are again trying to put too many uses on the land. And Memorial Centre is big, but it's not that big. And I just think it's going to be way too crowded.
This proposal did not only feel sudden for community members last week, as councillors also expressed frustration at the lack of communication from city partners and the current state of the conversation. This led Councillor Brandon Tozzo to reject the motion entirely.
There are formal processes on how to do this and how to bring people on board. The reason why the community is infuriated about this is the feeling that this was being railroaded. There's a great saying I love. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. If you guys want to go alone, be my guest. We can do great things when we work together. I fundamentally believe that. And I hope that's a message for you going forward if this passes or fails. If you want to partner with the city, please bring people on board. And Mr. Bribeau, I'll give you some credit. You have reached out to me numerous times. You have been more transparent. The city partners have done an abhorrent job at this. I'm also going to give a message to the market. You were told consistently you were safe. You were not under threat by me, by Councillor Chinnani, and you refused to listen to that. We had a meeting last night. It was constructive. I'm glad you listened. I'm glad you heard it loud and clear that you guys are not going to be threatened. You don't like it. That's fine. You cannot like something, but you are never under threat. We want to work with you. And this is, I think, a message for everybody to work together going forward on any projects that we want to do big things in Kingston, because we can achieve really great things as a city. I have to base my vote on what has gone so far, because I think past prelude will dictate what the future will hold. I can't in good conscience vote for this. I know that we're really early in the process, but this has left such a bad taste in the community's mouth. I can't do this.
However, the majority of councillors agreed that the opportunity is worth investigating, and gathering information in the coming months and proposing terms for a lease would allow for better decision-making. Councillor Don Amos summed up the perspective of councillors in support of moving forward.
I want to make sure that this turns into a win-win for everyone involved. And right from the market, the fall fair, and every group that uses there, the ability to have that conversation with staff through city staff run consultations. And I think that needs to happen. So therefore, I'll be voting for option one. And I'll be watching with a very keen eye on this. And if it's not a win-win, my vote will not be to move forward with this. But I want to give the opportunity for this to take place. And then we have the right information as council to make that educated decision, because I don't think we can make that educated decision right now.
The final vote was 9-3 to move forward with Victory Grounds Ventures, with Councillors Chinnani, Osanek, and Tozzo opposed. In the coming months, city staff have been directed to gather community feedback and draft a proposed land lease. Council will revisit the proposal on March 18, 2025, to decide whether the stadium will take shape at the Memorial Centre. Co-chair of the Williamsville Community Association, Fiona Charles, had this to say in an interview with CFRC following the decision.
Do you foresee that this process could allow a compromise where you would want the stadium to be built, or do you think it's just not compatible for the neighborhood?
I think it's not compatible. If you look at the Memorial Centre, an aerial view, or even walk around it because you don't need an aerial view, you will see that on every side there are homes right across the street. Homes where people live, homes belonging to someone like the man who signed the change.org petition and said, my eight-month-old won't survive if there's a stadium there right outside his bedroom window. So we really are talking about something that's very close to people physically and emotionally.
What are you hoping for leading up to the return of this topic to council in March?
Well, of course, we're hoping that council will see that the Memorial Center is not an appropriate site for a stadium.
This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about a prestigious honor awarded to Gananoque's Poet Laureate, Gretchen Huntley.
Thank you, Jesse. Gananoque's Poet Laureate Gretchen Huntley has been awarded the prestigious King Charles III Coronation Medal for her exceptional service to the community. Huntley received the honor on January 18th on Parliament Hill, a moment that has brought immense pride to the town of Gananoque. Known for her dedication to the arts and her unwavering support of local causes, Huntley's contributions extend beyond her poetry, officials noted. Her advocacy for the Food Bank and Humane Society has left a lasting impact on countless lives, earning her this national recognition. We are incredibly proud to celebrate Gretchen, the town of Gananoque stated. This recognition is a testament to her impact and the pride we all share in her accomplishments. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with a special sports report about the historic achievements of an Ontario-born football player.
Thank you, Dinah. After an incredible, record-setting season, Canadian quarterback Taylor Elgersma is poised to make history. The 6'5" senior starter from London, Ontario, put up gaudy numbers as he led the Laurier Golden Hawks to their first Yates Cup victory since 2016. In 8 regular season games, Elgersma completed 75% of his passes for over 2,000 yards and 20 touchdowns. This led to Elgersma being named the OUA MVP, the second consecutive year he was awarded that honor. He followed up his great regular season with a superb playoff run that saw him throw for over 1,000 yards and 11 touchdowns in just 3 games. Elgersma would lead Laurier to an 11-1 record and win the Heck Crichton Trophy, awarded to the country's top football player. Elgersma does have 1 year of OUA eligibility remaining, but it seems likely that he will be playing professionally in the near future. Elgersma is ranked 20th in the 2025 CFL draft rankings, the 9th highest rated U Sports player. The CFL is not the only professional league inquiring about the Golden Hawks signal caller's services, however. Elgersma is now the first U Sports quarterback to ever be invited to the NCAA's Senior Bowl, a game designed to shine a spotlight on top-tier draft-eligible players. Elgersma would be just the second Canadian quarterback to ever attend the Senior Bowl, and the first since Mark Rippon, who played Division I football at Washington State nearly 40 years prior. Elgersma has reportedly been interviewed by multiple NFL teams, including the Miami Dolphins, New York Giants, San Francisco 49ers, Indianapolis Colts, and Los Angeles Chargers. Only one U Sports quarterback has ever been selected in the NFL draft, University of Toronto standout Dan Faraday, who was taken in the 12th round of the 1982 draft by the Cincinnati Bengals. If 2024 was Elgersma's final year in the OUA, he would end his career with a record of 29-9, 2 OUA MVP awards, a Heck Crichton Trophy, over 10,000 passing yards, 72 passing touchdowns, and another 18 rushing touchdowns. Elgersma's first practice was held on Tuesday, January 28th in Mobile, Alabama. The 2025 Senior Bowl game takes place on Saturday, February 1st at 2:30 p.m. and will be broadcast live on the NFL Network. Elgersma has been to Mobile before, training at quarterback country last offseason with NFL quarterbacks Drake May and Bo Nix.
And thank you to Jesse for that story. Now over to LJI reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a report about the impending name change for Edgewood Road and how it impacts residents.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Loyalist Township Council have directed staff to commence public consultation regarding road name changes on Edgewood Road. If changes eventually take place, a number of residents in the area will see their current civic address changed in the process. These changes have been recommended to rectify concerns raised by residents, emergency services, and staff at both Loyalist Township and the County of Lennox and Addington. The existing numbering system in the area does not follow an orderly arrangement of odd and even numbers. Staff's report also noted that emergency services prefer to not have addresses labeled with letters and have had previous issues finding addresses in the area. Information technology manager with the township, Andrew Hooper, explains the point staff is currently at in the process.
No decisions have been made. There's been a couple of proposals in terms of what a solution could look like. But at this time, we just think it's important to get in front of the public, do some consultation, and allow us to gather more information and be able to bring that back and seek some more direction and make a decision one way or the other.
Heidi Coburn, a resident from Edgewood Road, notes some of the questions on residents' minds.
What is the reward to changing the neighborhood civic addresses after 50 plus years of these numbering systems being in effect? Is it worth the thousands of dollars to be spent? Will it affect the daily mail service, thus all residents are being set up in the mailboxes versus what is established currently? Emergency service response time significantly affected by non-conventional numbering in our subdivision. Is there any reports showing that it is affecting response times? And what is the transition timeline for Google Maps, navigation, delivery services, tools? Thus, if the changes are done, will we see any interruption with regards to that as well?
Another resident of Edgewood Road, Adam Thompson, noted a time in which public consultation could be ideal.
The Harewood Park Association actually has an upcoming AGM, and that may be an excellent time for consultation in terms of like having a representation of our neighborhood present to like ask questions, express their concerns.
Mayor Jim Hagedorn explains the process the township takes when looking for public consultation.
The way the procedural bylaw is that council receives information or questions like this, the answers will be coming. And so again, as the questions all flow in, we will be preparing answers.
Deputy Mayor Nathan Townend notes the importance of public engagement.
Public interest that's already been engaged. Hopefully that continues through the consultation processes. That's what's important.
Councillor Mike Budrick explains the township is looking for a positive outcome.
I do know there's probably people on both sides of this with opinions, so hopefully we can do what is best for the residents in that area.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Next is the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE, Brenda Little, with a story about an accessibility workshop tailored to businesses in Prince Edward County.
Hi, I'm Craig Foster, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJPE 99.3 County FM in beautiful Prince Edward County. Coming are some of the top stories from PEC. You can hear County FM news 5 days a week, six times a day on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county, or stream us at 99.3countyfm.ca.
The Ontario government enacted the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act, best known as AODA, in 2005, and that was established to improve accessibility to all public establishments for people with physical or mental disabilities, and the target date for compliance was set for 2025. Prince Edward County has been working to implement AODA standards, but realized a shortfall with the business sector. To encourage increased accessibility, the municipality sponsored a free, full-day workshop last Friday, facilitated by Pina Dentino, herself visually impaired, and David Wasaki, an occupational therapist, who are both part of the ACUM Global Access Group. Together, they guide organizations nationally and internationally to understand accessibility issues through training, the use of digital and mobile tools, and provide resources to support compliance as mandated by the AODA. The workshop brought a variety of people together, including those from the retail sector, hospitality industry, community living, and those wishing to learn more. participants learned about different disabilities and challenges, the AODA standards, document writing, and enjoyed the quiz and prize activity. Breaking into small groups for an interactive exercise was a highlight, where the participants created a scenario and brainstormed to maximize accessibility for their scene, while Pina and David guided the groups to success. Some participants shared their thoughts about the workshop.
Hi, I'm Becky Mulridge. I'm from Books & Company in Picton.
What are your thoughts on today's program?
I think it was an excellent presentation, and it shows how portions of the county can improve accessibility. It just makes your business known as an accessible one in the county, and I think it's important that people are aware of where they can shop and where it's going to be easy for them to shop, and how welcoming we can be.
Do you have any ideas coming away today?
Well, I have plenty of ideas, lots of resources to look into. We try to keep as current as possible with our accessibility guidelines, and this just gives me ideas about where we can improve.
Deacon is a student focusing on accessibility, and she expressed her thoughts.
I think it shows a lot of progress and positive growth in the county and in this community, just seeing that more and more people are coming out to try and improve their businesses and to really just learn and educate themselves and how they can be more accessibility-minded inside and outside of their business.
I chatted with Pina after the workshop, and she expressed her thoughts.
Accessibility doesn't have to be complicated. I think very often we tend to think of it, you know, we have to be fully accessible or we fail. And businesses are empowered to do so much with very little, in the sense that, you know, making sure that you have proper lighting or having a quiet day, you know, a sensitivity kind of day once a week or once a month where you invite customers or employees to do their work or to shop, you know, in a quieter mode, it's easy to do. It's not difficult to do, right? And it doesn't cost anything, right? Making sure that when you're looking for employees and you're asking for them to have an awareness on accessibility or have some training, it doesn't cost you anything. Right? It makes sure that those individuals you're going to bring into your organization have an awareness of what your company is about. I think the biggest thing is we want companies to walk the talk as well. So we see a lot of companies saying, we're going to be accessible. We have a plan. But they don't walk it, right? They don't, the owners don't know about accessibility. They don't enforce it. So we need to make sure that businesses also walk the talk. Right. So one, it's a shared responsibility. Two, making sure you walk the talk. Three, celebrate the success, whether big or small. Make sure that, you know, when you're doing something good and when it makes a difference, talk about it.
Right? Yes.
I think it's so important. We don't do enough of that.
Maybe
right?
Share with, you know, Chamber of Commerce.
Your BIAs, again, right? And don't be afraid to ask questions. I think that's one of the other things too, is that people sometimes get intimidated with people with disabilities, not knowing, you know, how to speak to or approach them or whatnot. Easy question, how may I ask, or can I, right? Rather than trying to just force yourself on them or trying to walk away because you're not comfortable about how you're going to approach them, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of great training out there. People just have to, you know, when I speak to businesses, I always say they have to have intention. It has to be done with intention or it doesn't get done.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Over now to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN Coburg, Dan Jones, with a story about the uptick of DUI charges in Northumberland County.
Impaired driving continues to be a concern for law enforcement in Northumberland County. Both the Ontario Provincial Police and the Coburg Police Service conducted ride campaigns during the Christmas season. The OPP reported 14 drivers were charged with DUI between November 21st and January 1st. In Coburg, no drivers were charged during the ride checks. However, Coburg Police Chief Paul Vandegraaff, in his monthly report to the Coburg Police Services Board, says three motorists were charged outside the designated campaign, while others received three-day driving suspensions.
The festive ride has wrapped up, and throughout the three different ride weekends, we checked over 750 vehicles in our community. Officers issued numerous Highway Traffic Act warnings and charges, including administering three approved screening devices that led to 2 3-day suspensions. There were three impaired arrests made outside of those regular ride check nights.
Despite the increased public awareness towards drinking and driving, and with plenty of alternatives in getting home safely, January does not seem to be slowing down for impaired driving. Northumberland OPP on Monday charged a Hamilton Township woman with DUI, alleging the results of a breath screening test were 3 times the legal limit. Yet in Coburg, Vandegraaff says in the past several weeks, 3 drivers received impaired driving charges.
Since the ride wrapped up in January 2nd, we have already had 3 more impaired arrests. This is becoming a significant problem in our community and across Ontario. The rates of impaired driving are increasing, and it is completely unacceptable.
Vandegraaff is reminding the public to plan ahead for any get-togethers or celebrations by having a designated driver, taking a taxi or Uber, or spending the night. Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones for that report. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region.
This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, January 30th, we're going to see a daytime high of minus 11 with a 30% chance of flurries throughout the day, a mix of sun and cloud otherwise, and that drops down 10 degrees overnight to a frigid minus 21. Friday, January 31st, we will see sunny conditions, but it still will be cold with a daytime high of minus 11. Saturday, February 1st, we're going to see a daytime high of 2 degrees, dropping down to minus 11 overnight. Sunday, February 2nd, we'll see a high of 4 degrees with a 45% chance of precipitation. And then Monday, February 3rd, we'll see a daytime high of 3 with a low around the 0 mark.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.